This is Osen Cocktail.
Hi, I'm Kirby Plessis. I have 20 years experience in intelligence analysis and OSINT, and I'm the founder of Plessis.net. You can find me online on Twitter as Curbster.
And I'm Cynthia Navarro, and I've been a private investigator since 1979 and went into using OSINT for my investigations in 1997. You can find me on Twitter at Finnegan's Way.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of OSINT Cocktail. Today, we are interviewing our fantastic new season two producer, Sarah Womer. Sarah's not just a podcast producer. Most of you probably already know Sarah, but she is an intelligence analyst and has been doing OSINT for 20 plus years. Not that she's old, but none of us are, right?
No,
we're all pretty young. All right. So anyway, Sarah, can you do a little bit of an introduction about who you are and a little bit about your background?
Sure. Okay, so I started OSINT in around 2000 when I switched projects at a defense company, and I started working with somebody that had contracts with the DIA and SOLIC. And so at that point, I was doing OSINT style research, and then I ended up working on information operations related products that utilized OSINT. And then September the 11th hit, and I have a background with some Arabic. So then I started working with similar, same kinds of projects, but then I also got to work with the counter disinformation team at State Department. So I worked with Todd Leventhal, and we countered extremism and we countered disinformation coming from hostile sources. Then I went to Riyadh, Saudi Arabia, and worked in the U.S. Embassy Public Affairs Office, working on hostile propaganda and countering disinformation there. And then I went to Baghdad, Iraq, again, working in primarily hostile and negative media environments and countering hostile sources. And some of that was threat related. And then after that, I ended up I moved from that part to moving to working on MI contracts after that at Fort Huachuca, where I taught at the Enhanced Analysis and Interrogation Training Team. And then I taught at the 304th MIBN OSINT team. And then I did mobile training teams to different bases where I was teaching OSINT at that time. I took a break when my situation changed and I moved overseas for a while in 2012. And then I re-engaged when I came back in around 2020. I was still working on OSINT, I just wasn't doing it as publicly, I guess.
And in 2020, what did you start doing?
2020, I started working with Kirby Plessis, which was totally awesome. And I had actually worked with Kirby right before going overseas. And I had taught a couple classes to the DEA, OSINT classes. And with Plessis Experts, I am maintaining the news portal, and I do research on the news portal, which it is a news portal, but I really try and make it tradecraft heavy. So I try and put in a lot of things dealing with analysis and methodology and tooling versus just news coverage. And then I'm also making a point of pulling primary sources. So if it's a news article citing a study, instead of incorporating the news article in the portal, I go in and find the study that the news article mentions, and then I put that in the portal. And then I also teach webinars with Kirby. So this Monday, I'm teaching a webinar on the analysis of competing hypotheses. And I also write articles, and I love writing articles and doing research. And then I also work on this podcast, and I want to do more.
So busy. Yeah. So one of the things that I want to say that since we've been working together that I think is really like kind of amazing is how strong you are on finding, you were saying you go and find the original papers, but you also go and identify whether or not this website's good to go to before even going to it. And we should all be doing that. But I don't know anybody who does it as regularly and as like methodically as you do. What do you normally do to find out whether or not you want to go to a website before you go there to read the paper or the news article?
Well, because the domain itself might not be nefarious or it might not have a problem, but because so many domains use third-party brokers for their advertising, they don't know what they're putting on their domains in many instances. And so you can have a domain that is a mainstream, academic, well-known domain, but they have purchased a package of ads, and you could have an ad in there that's feeding a cryptocurrency mining jacker, or that is giving information to Russia, or that is. And so unless you actually go and see who is tracking on the website where you're visiting, you actually don't know if you're secure or not, because even if the domain is not a threat, the ad server requests and the tracking on the domain itself can be a threat. And if there's browser fingerprinting, and if there's a third-party persistent cookies, like super cookies present, then you can actually compromise your system. So before I open any URL for news, even if it's from some of my colleagues, I always check that URL in something like Faux Analytics, Page X-Ray, to look at all of the tracking that's on the on there. And then I also use Blacklight, the markup, and URL Scan IO, and a few other things to find out how secure that domain is and whether or not it's safe to visit. Traditionally, people don't think about who's tracking them from the visit. They're usually just thinking about whether or not the domain is safe. And so they'll look it up and, you know, to see, is this domain safe via McAfee or something like that? And McAfee will say, oh, it's a trustworthy domain, but that's not the issue. It can be the tracker. And then I use no-touch research pretty much every single day.
Yeah, and I really do appreciate that you always check my website to see whether or not I've got some third-party domains. Cynthia?
Yeah, that is amazing, because I think that, and I'm glad that you prompted her to bring that up, because you don't stop and think about whether on the trackers that are on there and what other things are on a site. So I think we need to do a whole webinar for just that, talking about your tractors to get it out, do something a little different than we normally do. Yeah.
I have to tell you, Sarah's doing a whole day-long class on this.
Oh, awesome. Okay.
Right, Sarah, I don't think we scheduled it yet. Did we, Sarah? But I think it's going to be January.
We're scheduling it for January. And the part we're talking about right now is the OPSEC portion of it. But you can also flip it and use collecting on the collectors. So you can actually use the ad trackers for research. And there are instances when the ad trackers or the ad server requests are actually catered to the domain itself. So like, case in point, there's an extremist website that the actual trackers on that site aren't third-party trackers, and they didn't purchase them. They actually belong to that extremist organization. And so at that point, you have a pivot that you can use for researching that extremist organization. And then the other thing is, when you're collecting on the collectors, is when you combine that with things like backlinks, which Faux Analytics actually gives the external and internal links to a domain, that also adds research pivots as well. And there's some other tools that you can use that for collecting on the collectors. So we're going to have a one-day class on how you can use that data for OPSEC and for OSINT investigations and for InfoSec.
She's a rock star, Cynthia. Now you know why I've got her on the team.
Oh, yeah. That is so awesome. I think we talked a little bit about that before when you spoke for HTCIA. We got a little bit into that, and that it's all coming to me now. Oh, that's exciting. Okay. We'll have to know when that is.
We will definitely publish it publicly.
Oh, good, good.
But in the meantime, our podcast here is mostly about tools. So let's talk about some tools. Sarah, we want to know what your operating environment is. Let's talk about the hardware first.
Okay. So I have a Mac and an iMac, and then I have an MSI gaming laptop, and then I have Chromebook.
Okay. So you're working on Chromebook, which is a browser-based laptop, and then you've got, you said, Windows and Mac. Yeah.
Yes.
Anything else that you kind of use? I mean, do you do any experimenting with the phones or the mobile tablet devices?
So when I was in the States, I was experimenting with the throwaway phones, especially for research accounts. And then I did one fun exercise in 2020 where somebody on LinkedIn was trying to scam me, and he actually contacted me through White Room on LinkedIn, which was really funny. So I used a throwaway phone with a phone number, And I actually set up a meeting with him away from my house. So it wasn't, even though, you know, the phone wasn't tethered to my location, but just as like an extra level of security with a hat and sunglasses and the whole bit. He was very disappointed. But the point is that I enjoy playing with gadgets. So right now I have an obsession with, I really want a flipper. I don't have a flipper, but I keep seeing these flippers and it's like, those look, for me, like they'd be a lot of fun.
But what is a flipper?
It's a little gadget. It's like a hacker Swiss Army knife that you can use for finding Wi-Fi signals or doing a variety of things with IoT. But it's something that, you know, would also have applicability to OSINT as well as other activities. So I haven't played with one yet. So of course I want one.
Well, I hope you're going to put a link to that in the show notes so people can look up what the flipper is themselves.
Okay. Well, some places they ban them and other places they're okay.
Yeah, just explain to everybody so they can take a look at it and see.
Yeah. And I also have a tablet, but I'm not using my tablet right now. And then, yes, I sometimes play with my phone. And then my MSI gaming laptop is for things when I want to use a higher amount of space, like a VM.
Oh, I was just going to ask you if you use any, do you generally have hard drives around and that sort of thing as well?
Yes, I have hard drives. I don't get rid of any of my hard drives. I have all my hard drives. If I do get rid of a hard drive, I destroy it. but yes, and then external hard drives are good for saving data instead of keeping it on your hard drive. I know it's an old technique, but it works.
Yeah. Do you separate, like, in some cases, I'll separate cases out onto separate hard drives just so I can like hand them the case if I need to.
I haven't done that, but that's a great idea.
Yeah. No, I haven't done that either.
That's an excellent idea.
Okay. Well, let's talk about software. What are your favorite software? So again, we know you're using Apple products and Microsoft products. So you're obviously using Windows and iOS, or not necessarily iOS, Mac OS, but do you use virtual machines? Do you use VPNs?
Yes. So I like trying different VPNs. Currently, I'm using Norton and Nord, but there's one I want to try is that I have on my list for my next try is Mulvad. I know that Micah discussed it in his. I like their policy, so I'm interested in trying them out. And then I also, it depends what I'm doing. So if like, for example, if I was to look at a region and there's a regional software or regional software that would look better to domain, maybe I would consider using that software versus another software, just because that would make you look more indigenous for doing research. So I have done that in the past. The nice thing about VMware, which I don't have set up right now, but I did a few months ago, and I'm going to put it back on my MSI laptop, is that you can make your own customized OS on your MSI for whatever kind of research you're doing to make it user-friendly toward whatever your collection requirements or your objectives are. Plus, VMware has a nice, it costs a little bit of money, but the other thing I really like about VMware is that there's an option where you just click that instead of it just being from like the location that it says it's coming from on VM, you can actually have the traffic routed through the option I know of having a double layer of it going through Switzerland. So you can double layer your VM and then use it with a VPN.
Great. Okay. And so when you're doing your research, what kind of search tools do you use, or what kind of special maybe search collection tools?
For the news portal, what I do is I've been pulling from essentially not just search queries, but like communities of interest. So if I know there's like a gaming community of interest, I'll go look at that. OSINT communities of interest, I'll go look at those. Open source communities of interest, I will go look at those. And so I will go to the community to see what are the most recent posts that people are chatting about that are of interest. And then if they're specifically things that are like a study or a new tool, and so I will do that. I do think, though, it'd probably be better if I set up some more RSS, and I have that on my to-do list.
If I remember correctly, you're about to kind of experiment with the RSS to see, like, RSS to make a dashboard as instructed at the Osmosis conference. There was a speaker there that had a great presentation about creating a dashboard, and you're going to try and like take it a couple steps further and see what you can do with it.
Absolutely. I enjoyed it. I sadly do not remember the speaker's name, but I really enjoyed that presentation, because what he did was he made an RSS feed that was pulling data off of Telegram. And I manually have been pulling information off of Telegram. And then I've also been pulling information off of Telegram with some no-touch techniques, including pulling backlinks. And also you can actually query backlinks of a user account on Telegram. So you could theoretically, you know, look up somebody's with some tools. So you can look up a backlink of the user account.
I'm looking up the speakers right now, because we definitely need to give a shout out to that. Yes. So that is going to be Vincent Cook.
Yeah. Yes, it was Vincent Cook.
Yeah. So we'll definitely give and that's something that if anybody else who was not at OsmosisCon, which they should have been, they need to go and look up Vincent Cook and find out if he's got that information around, or just query him and see if he'll come and teach a class.
Specifically, I wanted to see his presentation. Is whether or not you could use some of the things that he mentioned with IFT, because you do all those really cool things with IFT in RSS, and he's doing these cool things with RSS, and I wonder if there's a crossover between the two, which is what I wanted to look
definitely at. Definitely. And even stepping up from IFT, also Microsoft's Power Automate, which was Microsoft Flow. Mm-hmm. That could probably take it another step further.
Yeah.
All right. So now, you're talking about seeing these communities of interest and they're on certain platforms. What platforms are you finding the most luck with right now? The most luck in getting resources, the most luck in finding things that you want. What platforms? And I'm thinking like Telegram, Discord. Where are you finding the people chatting and putting that stuff out? Because I mean, historically, it's been Twitter, and it still is Twitter. You still find lots of stuff on Twitter. But I want to know, like, where else are you finding content?
Telegram, for sure. I get some information off of Mastodon. I also will go to some Discord groups. And then specific, like if I'm looking at a niche topic, I will go to a niche platform to get information. So some of the stuff in the extremism category, like for example, the third party, we have a third party directory in our news portal that was issued by the extremist organization. So that was not, you know, that was off of their community of interest with no touch research.
Go ahead, Cynthia.
Have you ever done anything with Slack? Because it's funny because I've got some folks that are saying Slack is the best place to go. I said, no, you really need to go check out Discord. It's another place to go. But I haven't really heard anybody mention Slack except for this one little group of folks.
So I am on Slack, and I am in a community of interest on Slack. But you know, the thing with Slack is you need to be in the community. And just like we do some of the Discord servers, you have to be in that community to pull the data. So it depends what kind of data you're pulling. And then I also like going outside of the box. So I like going to some things that might not be the normal venues that somebody else would go to. And that's just me, you know, because I want to see what's outside of the venue. Because if you're only looking within the community, then sometimes you'll miss things that might relate to the community that are outside of the community.
Yeah, sometimes the more extreme stuff are in the small little niche groups that get like jut off of the community.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you know, the thing with Twitter is Twitter is a platform. The algorithm right now is just so, it's a jacked up algorithm, if you ask me, my opinion. And you know, right now, the people that are being recognized on Twitter as OSINT experts are not people that I would, most of them, not all of them, but like most of them are ones that I wouldn't consider as experts. And there was actually a news article that came out, or a study that came out, which I just recently put in the portal, that explains how some of the biggest influencers, and two of which were quote unquote OSINT people, you know, or OSINT affiliated, are influencing the war that's occurring right now with Gaza and Hamas and Israel. And the information is so skewed from that, the one source that, you know, well, actually all of them, but it's like eight, or I forget the exact number, but I think it was about eight, but they're all biased. And then the other thing I don't like about Twitter is there's a lot of, when you're looking at things like Twitter for data or for quality information, is there's seems to be a confusion by some audience. And you can see this with like all the people that are following these influencers that have a million followers, that confuse quality with quantity. So if I want to get like a really cool article on OSINT and open source, that might be housed on GitHub versus on Twitter. I really try and diversify where I'm getting my information from, and also to validate the information, because, you know, so many people do appeal to authority as, oh, well, this is, you know, they posted this and this person has a million followers, therefore this piece of information is a reliable source or a safe domain, or maybe a person was busy and they just slapped up a domain because they wanted to make a tweet that day. Maybe it's not safe. Maybe there's ad trackers from Russia.
Yeah, so. I totally agree with you on that, Sarah, because it you can have all the followers you want, but the quality of the information that you're getting, and it's like we tell everyone, don't rely on one place for your information. You have to go and verify it in other places, and it's on different platforms to verify it, not just different people as well on the same platform. You have to really go out and look in other places.
I think source credibility and reliability are really important, but at the same time, I mean, there's a lot to be said for academic research style of looking at related literature. So even if somebody comes out with a really cool OSINT tool and they put it in one article, I'm not going to say, oh, I love this OSINT tool, because I haven't tested it yet, maybe. And the other thing is there other similar things that relate to it, or is there some way to vet it? You know, is there, and so if it's the single piece of information from a single source, I do look at the credibility of the source, but at the same time, I do look and see if there's any supporting sources, which is another interesting thing that I've seen, is some people will, on Twitter, especially recently, under the current Twitter regime or ex-Twitter, is people get upset if you post up the same kind of thing for a different source, and they'll be like, well, I posted it first. And at that point, the issue isn't who posted it first, it's whether or not the information has, whether or not you can do information verification, and whether or not there's validity to it. And you can see this with some of the misinformation and disinformation that's circulating right now on the platform surrounding Ukraine and Gaza.
Okay, so I have a question and comment kind of for you, Sarah, because I know that on Twitter specifically, you get some really interesting finds. And what I'm specifically talking about is you find and share that there's a lot of, and this is not just Twitter, it's all these different sources, but I noticed you doing it on Twitter, is that you share some of the things that might be illegal on Twitter, like people, you know, human trafficking posts or extremist posts, that sort of thing. And you post them on Twitter and you're very good at finding these. Can you share with people some of your tips on finding like that kind of content on any platform, but, you know, Twitter as an example?
Well, actually, that goes back to something that was mentioned in the prior podcast that was with Jeff Teagues, which is two things. One is icons, like tattoos and branding and things like that. And then the other thing is niche or unique hashtags or verbs or wording or emojis. You know, so it's kind of
the keywords.
Yeah, mm-hmm. The keywords. So if I go into Twitter... And by the way, right now I'm kicked off of Twitter for a second time, and they said I'm never allowed back on the platform. But the reason that I got kicked off of Twitter is totally, I'm okay with it. I got kicked off of Twitter for pointing out that there was 3D printed guns and tap instructions on Twitter that were being posted by extremists. And one of the people that complained against my account was a sock puppet account. But in any case, it was a extremist-backed sock puppet account. I don't mind getting kicked off of Twitter. That's totally okay. I'm fine with it. But can I still research it without touching it or being on it? Yes, I can, with creativity. But on Twitter, a big part of it is the hashtags and the term use. So if you're looking at human trafficking in Dubai specifically, the hashtag of Dubai porta potty pulls up advertisements for women being advertised as porta potties. There is a whole, there's several clusters of humans that are being advertised out of Pakistan, one of which, and some in India too, one of which had underage. And so instead of saying underage, they would say students. One of my OSINT colleagues that I don't know that well on Twitter, they ran the one photo that I said I thought was underage. And they said, yeah, that the AI tool we used said that that person was probably 12. So there are clusters of advertisements for humans being sold on Twitter. Now, the thing is with that is some of them are real advertisements of people actually being advertised for sale, and some of them are bots. And so then you have to decide which ones are real and which ones are bots. And so you have to kind of look at how the wording is. Does the phone number that's being advertised or the phrase that's being advertised, where else is it showing up on the web? Like the one cluster in Pakistan, they actually had a location of a hotel that was on Google Maps. They had a phone number. They had a guy's name. They had, you know, there was a whole bunch of stuff indicating that probably was a cluster of people being sold in Pakistan. But then you have other ones that are, you know, fake accounts. And some of them are for phishing. So somebody will pretend to be somebody doing prostitution so that somebody clicks on their URL so that they can infect their computer. So that's another whole aspect of that on Twitter. And then the other thing on Twitter is weapons. You can buy weapons on Twitter. Ghost guns is a big thing. There's a huge 3D printing, or not huge, but there's a prevalent, I'll say prevalent, a 3D printing community on Twitter for guns. There's drug sales on Twitter. Some of them are reels, and some of them, again, are phishing. And, animals. There's I've seen some really weird things, from exotic birds being advertised for sale to, you know, turtles and puppies and things like that. Some are puppy scams.
Oh, I just wanted to say that we do get a lot of fish and wildlife inspectors coming to, or investigators coming to some of our classes because of stuff like this, where people are selling and smuggling in exotic animals and or rare endangered animals.
Mm-hmm. I think that platform, and it's not unique to that platform, but I think that platform right now is more broken with its moderation, just because they don't have a robust team to be able to deal with it.
This happens everywhere. I mean, in our early, we had a webinar with Ray Baker a little while back, and she's going to be a guest on the podcast coming up soon. But she's talking about on TikTok finding like amazing, amazing stuff on TikTok just doing keyword searches.
Yes.
Yeah.
Can I circle back just really quick about when you're talking about the emojis that are up there for each thing means different. There, Chester Hausmer is a professor for Arizona. Kirby, I think you know him. And he's been doing research, and he actually does have a program where you can download from, and I'm going to keep saying Twitter, from Twitter, and you can download all the emojis that are being used and what they mean. And so it would be interesting if he could take what we know for the bad ones, pulling them down to see how much they're used, and then have a guide, you know, put out for law enforcement or other investigators that are out there. Go ahead, Kirby.
Well, I was just going to say that every once in a while they change their emojis, though. So the thing is, it's got to be a living document as well.
Yeah. And he might be one to do that.
Yeah. With some of the traffickers, like there's one cluster that uses a particular stream of emojis for that organization or that shop, or what Jeff referred to as a stable. And so if I see that series of emojis, I know that it's most likely affiliated to that illicit business. So and other times, I mean, though it is generic, you know, like for example, somebody could put a snowflake for cocaine. That one's pretty common.
Let's bring it back to more software again. So we tend to go off on tangents, which are awesome. I can't stop our tangents. They're fantastic. But let's come back and say, okay, what other software do you particularly like to deal with in your investigations? Like, do you use any link analysis? Do you use Excel? I know you're going to do a class on ACH. So are we talking, you know, how do you normally work with that? What other tools do you use during your investigation, either collection or analysis or even reporting out?
Well, see, I love working with different software packages. So it really changes quite a bit. But some of the ones that actually you like, I like Built With. I like TNS Stuff Info. I like URL Scan.io. I like Alien Vault, not because Alien Vault is always 100% accurate, but it can get, like, if I'm looking at trackers on a website to figure out if they might be harmful to me, like something stands out and says AryanNations.com or something like that, then I can take it and I can pop it into Alien Vault. And if it's overtly, you know, this is not a safe tracker, it will show up as this is not a safe tracker. That's another one that I use on a regular basis. I think I already mentioned, I like checking backlinks to things. And for no touch, I really like no touch research. So I do use on a daily basis, our Internet Archive is one of my favorites. And then I also use Faux Analytics Page X-Ray, because Faux Analytics will sometimes save that page for me that, well, first, it shows me whether or not the domain is safe. But second of all, it will sometimes also save that domain page for me that Internet Archive won't. So if Internet Archive says, no, I'm not going to save this, then I'll walk it over to Faux Analytics Page X-Ray, and I know that that is safer than something like archive.ph or archive.it, which I will sometimes also use, but I know that there are some security glitches with that. Go ahead.
So the Faux Analytics Page X-Ray, is it PDF? Is it a navigable page? Is it a picture?
He gives you a full screenshot of the page, of the URL you put in. So
an image, like a JPEG or something.
Yeah, PMV. Yeah, and it's downloadable. So he provides a download option that you can download it. So you don't even have to screen capture it, because he's already screen captured it for you. And it's very nice that he's just giving this out gratis. You know, it's a very generous thing for him to do. I had asked him one time, I'm like, because he was talking about one of his tools on charging, and I was like, oh no, are you going to take this away? And he's like, no, that one stays free. And I'm like, oh, thank you. So as of right now, that one's still free. The other thing I like about it is it also pulls, instead of me having to go out and search to see where the website might be on social media, it also pulls all the external links, including, like, if it's on Facebook or Twitter or, you know, Telegram or LinkedIn, or, and it'll have a nice list of external links to that domain, some of them being the domain's other locations. And that saves, you know, that's a time saver.
All right. Another thing I know we wanted to talk about. So we talked a bit about software and hardware and something we talked about human trafficking a bit and that sort of thing. But one thing we thought we'd add to this one, since the three of us are very into AI. So Sarah, give us a little bit of information about what you're thinking about AI, what you're interested in, class you're developing.
Right now I'm very interested in AI in general, but two things that I think are key, and things are going to change very rapidly. You know, like Microsoft right now is, based on their 2019 $1 billion donation to ChatGPT, Microsoft has been playing with having a personal AI copilot for their products. So, you know, the copilot can make PDFs for you or PowerPoints for you and things like that. And then, of course, you have to do quality assurance and edit it. The trade-off of that is you have to give it all your personal information, which can be a bit disturbing. So I'm curious to see how the toss is going to come out on that one. But as far as, like, the stuff that's working, like, right now, it's interesting to see how ChatGPT is working with prompts and the importance of writing effective prompts. And you can't, it's the same thing. Well, it's not the same thing. It's similar to crafting an effective query that you would for a search engine, except you're doing it with text versus maybe some symbols for some of the advanced operators that you would in Google. So that is something that I think is really important. And then you have to look at the fact that there's different kinds of prompts. You know, there's generative prompts, there's informational prompts, there's even a debate about what kind of prompts there are. That to me is very interesting. And then the other thing I think is very interesting is not ChatGPT, but a lot of these other AI programs that are out there is how can they be used to create OS open source tools or to create OSINT tooling. If you have an AI tool that says it does data visualization and that you can buy that tool, you know, for making your own data visualization, incorporate it into something else, you could make something really cool. You know, there's some of them that do link analysis. For going back to ChatGPT, the other thing that I like besides looking at prompts is how you can use it not just for writing, but to assist with analysis, or to and it's not going to replace human analysis because it can't, but it can help instigate thinking, or maybe give the analyst a different way to think on something. And so, like, for example, you can use ChatGPT for a time event chart. I've tested it. You have to be very specific with your prompt, but you can get a timeline that you can use for a time event chart from ChatGPT. Same thing with analysis of competing hypothesis, which will be in my class on Monday. You know, I ran a analysis of competing hypothesis on O.J. Simpson and his murder trial on whether or not he was guilty, and I got two different sets. So if I was doing analysis on a collection requirement that had competing hypotheses, then I could use that information not as a replacement for my own, but to help my thinking on what I'm looking at for competing hypotheses.
Awesome. Cynthia, you have something pretty unique as far as the AI stuff.
Well, yes. What we wanted to do, and I do it with Laura Chapel, is what we did a murder mystery. Because we wanted everyone to have some fun while we were looking at all the different things using ChatGPT. What was interesting on that is we were learning as we were doing the presentation. So, you know, we have maybe 12 screens on it for our PowerPoint, but it took us like 3 hours because we kept going back and forth when they talk about be careful what your information is you're getting back. You have to remember so many different things that there definitely is hallucination, which is it, but truly believes ChatGPT is very dynamic. It knows everything, but it doesn't. And again, as Sarah was mentioning, it's your prompts that you're using is so very important. So we use different data set queries relative to what we were doing. We also compared our results and talked about it as we were doing this murder mystery. And then we were also doing codes. So when we're looking at evidence, you know, what does this code mean? We were learning different languages that we never heard of when we were looking at some things. And then we were asking for in different languages, what can you tell me that this means? So there was such a variety of information we were able to glean from using the ChatGPT, but there was also a lot of stuff we had to remember how our prompts were. That I think that's probably one of the biggest things, as Sarah was saying, that the prompts really make a huge difference on what you're going to get back. After we've done the class, I even sat with somebody for probably about an hour talking about what you can get from it, the positive side, because there is a great positive side. It can help you with your resumes. It can help you with so much stuff, but you have to have your own thoughts as you're doing it and what you believe it should be, and then go back and recheck it. And then remember, we're only going back if you're using ChatGPT-4, you know, that came out much sooner than 3. So you definitely need to really consider the information you're getting and how accurate it's going to be, because it's not always good. But with the murder mystery, we had so much fun. We were also using it for art because we had a visual that we had put up, and we ended up you know, it's not perfect. I'm using the AI for going in there for DALLE. I can't even remember how that's pronounced. Dolly, there you go. I always think of a doll. So Dolly is, we use that, but we had to use also Photoshop to bring some things in to give it a little bit more of a reality of just this one picture that we wanted to do, but it did a great job. I mean, you could just sit there and talk about what it is that you want within there, the year, the colors, so much stuff, which Kirby, you know that with all of your art, but it's awesome. I really like it, but I want to show people in a fun way. And that's what Laura and I did, is by doing a murder mystery and then going through what just the stages of what happened, who was involved,
who done it.
Fun. Yeah.
I can't wait to hear about when your next murder mystery is. And so I want to talk about, as far as AI goes, I will talk about images mostly, because again, I have been doing a lot of AI art. And yes, it's very rare that you can actually use one tool and come out with exactly what you want. If you have something ahead of time in mind, you can play with the tool and let it see what it's going to come out with. But if you have something in your mind, it's going to be a lot more work than you necessarily think. And one of the things that I've been doing with that is making, for example, fake people to figure out, you know, how you can do it. And how can you tell if they're fake? And I know that anybody who's been any of my good friends, I push out a whole bunch of different versions of these fake people and tell people to tear them apart. Show me what's fake in this picture. And a lot of times, I was not so good at the beginning, but I think that right now, a lot of times what people are saying, oh, this looks fake, is actually the real part of the photo. But I never use just one picture, or one tool rather. I never use just one. At a minimum, I'm usually using at least three. My favorite tools, I mean, Dolly is a great tool. I love Dolly, but that's not the tool that I use. I usually use Wonder, and then I use BizArt, and then I use AI Mirror. And those three together do a pretty good job of making a realistic human. But I also do AI art for all sorts of other weird things, because if you look at my art pages, you'll see that I'm not interested in humans too much. I'm interested in some weird stuff. But coming back to AI for OSINT, another thing you can do with images, not even AI images, but real images, is you can actually, in ChatGPT-4, as you kind of mentioned before, you can actually load images into ChatGPT-4, and you can ask it to do the analysis. I made a fake image, all right? So it was one of those images that I made to make it look real, but it was fake, and it was Ritu Gill. We were at Osmosis, and I took a picture of her, and I showed her live right there how I would use the three tools together to make a picture of her as an older gentleman, and we put him as an artist in front of the Eiffel Tower. So then I uploaded that into ChatGPT-4 and asked it, okay, where is this? Who is this? Bunch of questions. It's very specific that it's not going to tell you who, as in the name of a person, but you can ask, you know, what is their race? What is their likely age? Things like that. And then it told me that it was in Paris because of the Eiffel Tower. But then I asked it, well, what direction, what time of day is the background consistent with what's around the Eiffel Tower? And it told me the type of architecture. It told me where the sun was, so what type of time of day it was. And then based on that, what direction the camera was likely facing and what season of the year based on the foliage. It was really amazing how much it gave me. I do find that's kind of hit or miss, because some photos it can't do anything with. But there's quite a few. It'll tell you, you know, what city it thinks you're in based on the license plates of cars, the type of architecture that's around, the type of streets, what people are wearing, what the seasons are. Really, really cool stuff coming along as far as image analysis as well.
I was just going to say that one thing I think that will probably, looking at projections, I think one projection with images and AI, and also with text and AI and audio with AI, is that we're going to come up with, essentially, instead of Google dorks, AI dorks. And I think that, you know, the self-censoring that's happening right now in ChatGPT, that might be a temporary thing, because you're going to have competitors to it. And some of those competitors might not have the same governance that ChatGPT does. So I think it'll be an interesting evolution to see what kind of dorks come out in the future. Yes.
I absolutely agree with you on that. And you can see that in the art ones, because you can create your own art, and one based on Stable Diffusion. You can actually build your own, and you don't have to have the don't let are XXX images, you can let it do whatever you want to do, right? So that is going to happen. People are going to be able to start making their own even chat bots on their own, and then release them in public, and again, compete against the big guys for, and I can actually think of one right now that does at least the XXX stuff. I know that there is an erotica novel writing AI. So, you know, now the question is, like, which one's going to do facial recognition for you? Which one's going to go run the reverse image searches for you and try to figure out exactly who that person is? Because those other ones obviously won't do that yet, but somebody probably will.
You know what I was looking at? I was reading something this morning, and now I can't remember the name of the show, but there is a show that's out that they're actually, as a co-writer, they're using AI for co-writing a television program that's popular, and for the life of me, it went out of my head. But it is amazing how much more, and it's going to be used in the White House. They just announced that this morning, where they're going to be integrating AI more into different departments. I'm going to have to pull that up, and I'll pull the article up of where I found that. But it definitely, it's growing, but there will have to be some governance. Because if you're talking about the White House using it in different departments, there has to be governance. It's going to be interesting to see, you know, within the next couple of years, the changes that we're going to see.
Absolutely. All right. So we've talked about a lot of things. Let's talk about our last call. So Sarah, what's your last call link? What's a tool that's been interesting you a lot lately that you've been kind of having a lot of fun with?
I haven't played with it yet, but I found it. I'm looking at right now, AI prompt generators instead of manual AI prompts is looking at, I would like to see what the utility is of some of these automated AI prompt generators. So one of them that I was about to check out is coefficient.io, which is an AI prompt generator for best results from ChatGPT. So I thought I'd give it a try and see if it works. But as far as like ones that are tried and true, because I mentioned it several times, I really like Augustine Faux's page x-ray, just because of its multi-dimensional use, from making sure that it's safe to visit a domain, to finding what links are internal and external on the domain, to getting a download of the screenshot of the domain, to the HTML, XML of the a tracking that's on the domain. And so tracking description that's on the domain.
Cynthia, what's your last call?
So many things up here on my program. Okay, so one that I am like Sarah just starting to look at is called AI Weirdness. And so it's a neutral net generated art prompts. And I thought, oh, that might be kind of fun. So we'll give you the link and see what weirdness you can come and find with it, and have some fun, have some definite fun. But it's in the art, which is usually, that's not where I go. That's you, Gerby.
I'm all about the weirdness. That sounds awesome.
Yeah.
Okay. So, and that just like made me and my brain go psh, as far as like, what mine was.
Sorry.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I remember what mine is. All right. So my last call is actually, and I might have already said it once in this podcast series, but we're talking AI, Ben's Bytes and TLDR, two AI newsletters that I find really useful, because they'll just tell you like, what's the newest kind of thing up? And it's just a kind of a quick read. Both of them are just like, you know, a couple of bulleted paragraphs and you're on your way. So again, that's Ben's Bytes and the TLDR AI newsletter.
Yeah, TLDR, I really like that one too, because I'm always looking at that.
All right. Thank you for everyone for listening to our latest OSINT cocktail. And Sarah, thank you so much for being here. Do you have anything you want to shout out, Sarah? I know you have some webinars coming up. And again, also that day-long class for...
Actually, yes, I do. So I'm going to be teaching a webinar on, I'm going to be having a webinar Monday on analysis of competing hypotheses, which will be looking at manual ACH and then also AI assisted ACH. And then I will be doing the 1 day class in January on collecting on the collectors, that will be looking at how to use ad analytics and backlinks for investigations, from OPSEC to OSINT investigations to just a little bit of InfoSec. And then I wanted to mention that the Plessis Academy has a class already in it that I did that was a webinar on GIFs and emojis for open source intelligence investigations. And that one of the primary examples that was used was the use of the pine tree and what that signified on some Twitter accounts.
Awesome. And I know your class that's going to happen on Monday will be happen before this comes out, but those kind of classes are still available for on demand. So if somebody wants to kind of check that out. Again, thank you so much, Sarah. Where can people get hold of you?
They can get a hold of me at sarah@pluses.net.
All right. Cynthia, what do you want to shout out for the end of this podcast?
What do I always shout out? Osmosis Association. Get out there and join. And also, they're getting ready for the Osmosis Con, which will be in October. I don't remember the exact date, but it will be in Las Vegas at Planet Hollywood. So definitely do a shout out for that one. And that's about it for right now. We're just working in the background, trying to make things better.
Awesome. And that Osmosis Association, also, I'm pretty sure there's going to be an AI group in there.
Yes, so. I can put that in there today.
Oh, good. I'm enjoying.
Okay. All right. I will get that in today.
And again, I am also a part of the Osmosis Association. Come in there and chat with us in there and even maybe give us some ideas for future OSINT cocktail podcasts. And my shout out again is going to be, you know, pay attention to our Pluses Academy online training pages. You'll see more stuff coming from Sarah. You'll see more stuff coming from me. We have a lot of guest speakers as well. All right. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you. And don't forget to rate us on your favorite podcast app.
Also, please share so that we can continue sharing this podcast with you.